Hey, it's Liz Kelly, and welcome to the Ringer Podcast Network. True Detective is back, and The Ringer's Chris Ryan and Jason Concepcion are our guides as we navigate the twisting pathways of Season 3's plots, themes, and characters on The Flat Circle, a True Detective aftershow. Follow Jason and Chris as they chase down leads, explore each episode's cultural context, and discuss true crime cases that mirror the ones in the show. Join the guys live every Sunday night after True Detective on The Ringer's YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook pages.
Basketball is very good. Jimmy Butler is actually a good teammate. Sabonis is the most important front court pacer. De'Aaron Fox is better than Donovan Mitchell. Basketball is very good.
Hello, and welcome to the Ringer NBA show. This is the group chat. I am Justin Verrier. I am wearing a turtleneck.
He is.
And joining me, as always, Paolo Getty.
What's up? And looks great, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And the glue gal, Haley O'Shaughnessy.
It's very sharp.
Also joining us, Bobby Wags on the ones and twos. Waggy B is what I wanted to start calling you, but I don't know. We could work with that one.
You don't have to let him call. You can say no.
So no Chris Ryan today. He is hanging out with Mally Rubin talking about dragons, preparing for all sorts of different live talk shows. We stick to the audio medium because we keep it real.
Wow.
But we are replacing his fourth chair at a certain point. Riley McAtee will join us later to talk about the most interesting team in the NBA. But first, we're going to talk about some teams at the midway point of the NBA season. I think most teams are at the 41-game mark. So it just seems like a pretty good time to talk about who is doing well, who is doing poorly, and who is doing things that are memeable.
Man, time flies.
Time does fly. This season has been kind of flying, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it is. Maybe we're just really comfortable. We're in a groove. We've played alongside Coasting. Each other a couple times, mm-hmm. You know? I know where you're going to be. Yeah.
We're like the Thunder this year.
Yeah, definitely not okay. Last year.
Right. I'm Paul George.
Who's Mello? Danny?
Yes.
Danny was Mello. So probably the best place to start is just the best player in the NBA. And I think last night's game between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Houston Rockets provided a nice little window into that. Milwaukee Bucks won that game, although James Harden had 42. Kind of came alive late in that game, but the Bucks defense really kind of put the clamps on him. I would say that right now, while Giannis has been particularly good, his team is first in the East, I believe, at this point. I would say that James Harden has been the MVP of the first half of the season. Not only because it's the statistical argument, and he's had like, what, five, his scoring average is five more than like the next highest guy, I think. Yeah, Anthony Davis, first in RPM, all that stuff. But if we're saying like what this season has been about in a very Russell Westbrook-y MVP sort of way, I feel like this is kind of the season of James Harden being the sort of superstar that we haven't seen ever before.
It is.
Well, just in general, just mm-hmm. while he's scoring and shooting from threes in ways that we've seen before, but the way he manufactures points with just the step backs, with just getting to the line, with getting calls, all this other stuff, it seems like he is actually
facilitating the offense.
He's just right. Like this singular talent that I've never seen before. And so I just feel like the season is about Harden at this point.
It is very fascinating to me how we came into the season thinking it was going to be this sort of MVP-like campaign for big men like Anthony Davis and Giannis. And Giannis has taken a huge leap. Like, the Bucks are in first place. I don't think any of us expected that. So it's very hard to go against that because it's more of a gradual progression in terms of, like, Giannis and the Bucks have just been really good the whole time. Whereas, like, Harden has had to be the best player we've seen in, a long time, this stretch, for the Rockets to even be where they are right now. So he's almost the definition of valuable in that sense. I still think that I would give the edge to Giannis just because of the leap that he's made and the way the Bucks are number one, whereas the Rockets are not number one in the West. But it's getting very hard to deny Harden what he's saying.
I cannot believe the terminology you guys are using right now.
Wow.
Why?
Because.
Are you anti-Harden? Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. But I remember 2 years ago, not with you, Justin, but I'm just going to assume, okay, I'm sorry.
That's right.
You and your Harden argument against Russ.
Oh.
This is the exact people who did not want Russ to win the MVP are now saying that Harden should win the MVP. And you could also make the argument that Harden now is sweeping people away from the logical choice, which is Giannis, like Russ did in 2016-17. Everything lines up. Russ led in points that year. This is the least help Harden's had in years, which was Russ's problem back then, and which is why everyone found him so impressive, myself included. And the Rockets' record is not spotless. They have how many wins? They're 24 and 17?
23 and 17.
Okay. They're 23 and 17 because they have a really mind-blowing run and a 14-game-long performance without Chris Paul, where Harden has been by himself, doing everything, as you said, singularly. Okay, at this time in the season, 2016-17, Russ's MVP season, the Thunder were 24 and 16. And the main argument against them was always that it should be more about wins, should be more about elevating your team beyond just capable, but to a truly magnificent team. And the Thunder were always just capable.
Yeah.
And we're saying this the night after the Rockets lost to Giannis in the Bucks.
I just told you. I think Giannis has the edge. I'm just saying.
Right, right.
The one thing that I think about when I think about this argument, part of it is the fact that it is fresh on our minds, but at the same time, I feel like what we're going to remember the season for is this Harden stretch. This watching him every night, you know, beat the Warriors on that three, kind of just step back and crossing guys over. Like, there is almost an aesthetic addition to the already amazing numbers that I think bolsters his case in a way that maybe we didn't expect going into the season.
I don't even disagree with you, but what I'm saying is it's so interesting to hear this compared to like 2 years ago, and especially what you just said aesthetically, because up until 2 weeks ago, now it's kind of gotten quieter, but still true. People were constantly saying, I just can't stand watching Harden play. He's just not fun to watch play. I get what he does is effective, but it's not fun. Right. Guess who else wasn't fun to watch play in 2016-17? Russell Westbrook. Nobody liked watching him play, but it was effective. It's so bizarre to me that now the same people who were not in favor of him winning in 2016-17 are making the exact same argument. I'm not pointing to you, Paolo.
I was not in favor of Westbrook winning. In the same way that I'm saying Harden is going to make this year memorable because of this run, that's what Westbrook did.
Right,
and that's
what do we remember about 16-17? Exactly. The thing that blows me away mostly is just the record. If they finish with a far better record than the Thunder had that year, okay.
That would be my case for Harden. I totally agree with you. I think we are kind of becoming entranced with just the theatrics of what Harden is doing. A lot of them are coming down to the wire. So there's just like this energy that comes off of a Harden performance that you just don't get from Giannis just like dunking over the Cavs and winning by 30. I would say the main difference between Westbrook and Harden is just effectiveness and efficiency.
Yeah.
Because while Russ was this one-man band who kind of did everything and had that same sort of vibe going to him, the Thunder were 15th on offense that year, whereas the Rockets so far are fourth. And I think like Harden has found some magical blend between being Russ and still being a Steph Curry, which I think is really unique and interesting, where his offense is basically his own. He's one team where he could put up numbers. This was in Kirk Goldsberry's piece on ESPN the other day, which is really good, is that Harden isolation play yields 1.16 points per possession, which is a really nerdy stat. It's basically like what you could expect from him doing one certain thing. The Bucks offense not in transition is 0.99, which essentially says that a Harden isolation is better than any set play that the Bucks are going to run, which is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, he is a one-man offense, and he's not sacrificing anything, I guess is the point.
He's not also, he's not damaging.
For him, so when he's in isolation, does that also account for if he dishes it out and somebody else scores off of it?
I believe so.
Okay, because he also has, even though he doesn't have Chris Paul, and this is the most alone we've seen him, he also still has great three-point shooters around him. Even without Gordon, he's got Austin Rivers, who's been playing really well for them. He's shooting like 38%. Daniel House, 37%. PJ Tucker, 40%.
See, but I think the thing is, the thing we're not maybe realizing is that there is a small aspect of Harden's game that is like LeBron's, and that he makes everybody around him better just because of what he does from an isolation standpoint and how he draws defenders to him and then kicks it out.
Yeah, this is a weird part of the MVP discussion that I always hate, where it almost becomes like you don't know whether or not to knock the front office for building the proper context for this player to succeed, or do you favor a team like the Thunder in the Westbrook years, where it's like if he had a few more shooters, maybe they would have been a lot better and maybe his points would have kind of been lower. And so the stats wouldn't have been as gaudy.
A lot of this for me is just out of spite because it was just 2 years ago that I heard this exact same thing being used as an argument for why Rush shouldn't be MVP. But if they do finish with a better record, then I'll concede that.
So who's your MVP right now?
Giannis.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would say by slight edge.
Who does it all for his team, but still has a good team surrounding him.
You know what I think
is
also...
That's like the definition of Giannis in the Bucks right now.
Remember when we talked about what we look for in a league pass team? I mentioned, you know, you need a sort of like this guard figure to be able to take over games and do essentially what Harden is doing. And I think that plays into how we also think about the race, if you will, because while Giannis is having, I think he had 20-20 last night, at the end of the day, like, who's going to have the ball down late in a close game and it's Harden, and he's going to have those, for lack of a better term, Heisman moments that we call them in college football. He's going to have them more often than Giannis, maybe.
Yeah, that's a great point. We were discussing this last night.
I think I would also... Who was?
Paolo and I.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no,
you were with Sean Yu watching the Rockets without us.
I definitely did not want to be in the group text, so cool. That's the other thing about Harden's game, though. Why he's going to have those big moments a little bit more than Giannis is because of his game, the nature of his game. He shoots the three. Giannis doesn't shoot the three. Three is worth more than two. It always boils down to that. And so his big shots will affect the game more.
I thought last night's game was a perfect example of this, where Harden was, the Bucks seemed to have foiled him in a way that I hadn't seen ever before. And I wonder if more teams are going to kind of take heed and see it, and we'll see that more where they're, what was it? They were forcing him more right and to drive more rather than to step back in three. We'll track that
shots
going forward.
Brogdon, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if a week from now we're basically saying that Harden is shut down and he's not even close to who he was. But no, I think it's easier for someone like him to take over a game late, whereas you watch Giannis and he's not the best ball handler. He's obviously a plus ball handler for his size, but he was forced to dish it off to kind of set screens to get the offense going. And I think a few years ago, the Henry Abbotts of the world would be like, well, you want the best shot out of a set offense, not a hero ball. But you could see what Harden is doing. He literally erased a 15-point deficit. They were down to three with 2 minutes to go. They had every chance in the world to be in a game that they shouldn't have been in.
And that's the most fascinating part to me, too, is the fact that he's taking what we in these past few years in the NBA have previously thought of as a bad possession or a bad style of play in the isolation and made it efficient through his own efficiency.
Yeah. It's just such a weird blend of new and old. And it's just kind of fascinating to watch. Other guys I put on this list just for consideration, Joel Embiid. I think he had another 40 point or something on
the
night.
The Sixers
are kind of a mess. Nikola Jokic, Steph Curry, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis. Among this list of kind of also-rans, do any of them make a particularly compelling case, you guys?
There's kind of caveats for all of them, right? Yeah. Steph missed time. Pelicans are losing. I guess you could make the argument probably the most for Kawhi, although he's still
would
resting on back-to-backs.
I think the argument you can make the most for is on this other list is Jokic, because the Nuggets are the one seed right now, and he does so much for them that maybe doesn't result in the gaudiest of numbers, but he's very much a linchpin. And you know, I feel kind of bad because I have never been a huge Jokic person. There's something about him that never really clicked with me.
You don't like the floater?
No, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know why. It just never really clicked with me. I'm not saying it's fully clicking with me now, but it is pretty undeniable what he's doing.
Yeah. The one guy that stands out on this list to me, Anthony Davis. I remember when I know. I've been such a Pelicans optimist lately, which if you follow, if you were in our Slack channel, last week, you were in DC, but last week I was all about, you know, maybe the Pelicans, if they get one more guy back in, they can break back into the top four. But it was weird.
That was the take.
Did you not listen to the podcast, Haley?
No, she does not.
No, but a couple of years ago when he was first kind of rising to prominence, his whole case was based on statistics. And it's funny that he's leading in PER ahead of Giannis, ahead of Harden, and nobody notices him because of that same thing. Everything is diminished with the Pelicans now. We expected so much, and they've just kind of... disappointed so much that we forget the fact that AD is just putting up 20-20s all the time, and just probably the best combination this season of defense and offense. So I don't know, and I think it's particularly interesting that in the All-Star voting recently, he did not get into the top three of the front court in the Western Conference.
And that's criminal.
Yeah.
You know who was there? Luka Doncic.
Wow.
And now this is just fan voting.
Yeah, yeah.
The media voting will come in and the player voting will come in. And I really doubt that the players will gravitate toward a rookie. But I think it's particularly interesting.
I want to add somebody to this list. I think maybe I find it weird that I'm kind of having to cape up for him, but Kevin Durant has been having an amazing season. Like he's averaging 28 points, more rebounds than he did last year, more assists than he did last year. And he's played all 41 games. And I know you added Steph, and Steph has been amazing, but he's missed like 11 games, I think. And Durant's been kind of this Iron Man of complete efficiency too. Maybe not as flashy or as dominant as James Harden, but I think I would put him in my like top five or top three right now.
I think here's the problem with him, and I'm not saying this is my problem with him personally.
Sure.
But I think this is why we didn't even think to put him in this conversation. The Warriors narrative has overwhelmingly been that this team is not as gelled together as they have been in the past, right?
Sure.
Which is kind of it keeps developing every year that they're kind of separating a little bit. And there's just no narrative around Kevin Durant.
I know, and I find that kind of a bummer. I find it a bit of a bummer because he's been really good.
I always find it's weird when the media talks about, like, why don't people talk about anybody?
Sure, yeah.
Because, like, we're literally just talking about him right now.
No, I'm not even saying that, though.
No, but I agree with you. Like, he does not, like, for some reason, all of his heroics just kind of get lost. And I think part of it's just because, like, it's the equivalent of splitting the vote, but just in real time, because like we gravitate towards Steph. He's definitely the spirit of that team. And even in recent days, like the fact that Boogie is going to come in and join them, it's just way more interesting than Kevin Durant just dominating what they have.
Which is fine, because that was his own decision.
Yeah. And speaking of all-star voting, it is interesting that Durant is ahead of Anthony Davis. I think that's probably appropriate. And I guess we'll see what happens when Luka Doncic ultimately drops out. And speaking of the All-Star team, it's time for NBA All-Star voting. And this year, it's actually easier than ever for fans to vote because you can vote just by searching on Google. Just search for your favorite player or team and you can vote right in the search bar. You can also search on Google to stay up to date with live scores and view upcoming game schedules. The All-Star game is February 17th and voting runs until January 21st. Fans can vote for 10 players a day, so go vote on Google. All right, next up here, I think it's kind of a relevant topic to what we were just discussing, the Houston Rockets. I have them as my biggest surprise of this season, which is a little disjointed simply because they were picked, I believe, second in over-unders in the West, and they're way below that at this point. I just think the way that they've come back from the dead has just been so incredible. And
to be clear, you're saying most pleasant surprise.
Yeah, most pleasant surprise. I always think of surprise as pleasant, disappointing as disappointing. I don't know. At a certain point, I think we all kind of came to the conclusion that they needed like this big trade in order to solve their issues, that it was core deep and that they just didn't have the supporting cast to do what they're doing. But all of a sudden, they started 9-11 and now they're just three losses
since
Justin. December 8th.
They had a big trade.
Did they?
Austin Rivers,
wow. Baby.
Are you serious?
He's been good.
He's been
put some respect on
he's
that
been
LA
really good.
Native's name.
Is he an LA dude?
I don't know, but he was with the Clippers.
He was there a while.
So. I believe he's from Orlando, but you know, it's the LA of the worse. East Coast. No,
that's definitely not what anyone is.
it's just a big turnaround. They have done a lot of those interesting moves on the fringes. They picked up Austin after he got waived by the Suns. Daniel House has been good for them. The Gary Clarks of the world, they've been good for him. I don't know. It's just the way that they've turned this thing around has just been a complete surprise for me. And I'm glad that they're back. I like having them in my lives.
I almost hesitate to give them this because, like you said, they're only most surprising because the season started so unexpectedly terrible.
Yeah.
The Celtics are kind of in the same vein for me in that way. So I wouldn't call them the most surprising if we're giving it a pleasant connotation. For me, this would go to the Spurs. Absolutely.
Yeah.
San Antonio lost its best player, replaced him with a guy who kind of goes back in time. You know, he's like a early aughts mid-range star.
Mm-hmm,
and he's going to the Spurs, who are already kind of hesitant to like really embrace the three. And they also lost some extremely key veterans. They lost Tony Parker, Manu retired. And at the beginning of the season, DeJounte Murray got hurt. And we were like, oh my God, their season's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much a testament.
And we're saying their season's
system.
Over because DeJounte Murray got hurt.
Right.
You but know, he, so at the same time, I think it's incredible that they have gotten to this point, but I'm not sure I should ever say that about something Greg Popovich does.
Right, exactly. That's the thing. I think it's a testament to the system he's established there, which is kind of have to, this year, I feel like it's had to be some sort of thing where they figure out who they are along the way as opposed to knowing who they are before the season. And I think, you know, Kevin has written about this, about how, you know, when LaMarcus,
Clark.
Kevin O'Connor, yeah, not Clark. He's written about how, you know, when LaMarcus and DeMar are on the floor, they're prioritizing the mid-range.
Yeah.
Whereas when they come off the floor, they're actually shooting threes, which is this weird kind of duality that is very fun in a way. But
that's
also,
what Popovich does best is taking players and finding their strengths.
Exactly. I'm most surprised by them for definitely.
Yeah, I think that's like a testament to great coaching. I just don't know another team that could do what he's done, where he's just basically playing different styles depending on the personnel on the floor. And I think it's interesting, especially because like I used to think about this a lot with Alvin Gentry and the Pelicans, where he almost used to force players who probably shouldn't have been playing his style of play into that. Like Boogie is the perfect example where I think Boogie adapted to what they wanted to do, playing fast, shooting threes, all this other stuff. But I think you saw like maybe they pushed him to his limits, and that probably had like some effect, even like, I don't know, big or small, in him having that kind of debilitating injury. But the fact that Pop can kind of just like pick and choose how he wants to like use these guys is incredible. And you look at the talent on the floor there, like you said, they don't have DeJounte Murray, who might be their most talented young guy. They have Rudy Gay still. Pau Gasol is getting in there. Davis Bertans is back from the dead. We thought he might have been a miss, but all of a sudden he's been playing particularly well. There's just a lot of guys that they're getting in there. So that brings us to our NBA watch of the night. The Spurs are actually playing the Thunder, which is another team that you can kind of rope into this category. I think they've been a little bit of a surprising, especially because earlier in the season, they had some of those injuries. We thought Roberson might kind of sink them, but here they are. They look as good as they have been pretty much in 2 years.
They're one of those teams where nobody really knew what to expect from them, but it has been surprising in a good way. The fact that Paul George and Russell Westbrook are working so well together. Mm-hmm. This is kind of weird timing to say that because it came just after the Thunder loss, where Russ took 2 threes as the clock was running out, and essentially they lost the game because of it. But I do think that they've been a pleasant surprise, especially on defense as well.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. They're playing the Spurs actually on TNT tonight. And I think those two teams, I mean, it's funny that all this stuff happens and then years later, it's just still the same teams going at it, pretty much in the same place. You can catch that game tonight at Thursday. I think it's the late game. And remember, if you want to watch every NBA game, subscribe to NBA League Pass on NBA.com, Amazon, or your local cable or satellite provider. The only other team that I would throw in there is the Brooklyn Nets. Our Brooklyn Nets. We've been waiting so long, patiently waiting for this team to kind of explode. And all of a sudden, you look at the standings, they're literally right behind the Boston Celtics, six in the Eastern Conference, although kind of a distant six.
Yeah.
There's even more recency bias on this one than the Rockets.
Yeah. They've definitely turned it around lately. And I think that
it's 13 of their last 17 that they've won.
That's pretty incredible. I mean, I remember for a certain stretch while we were over Christmas break, like they kept getting a lot of easy teams. Like even when it was a good team, like the Raptors or some of these other one, it was like, oh, they'd just been on a second game of a back-to-back. And
yeah, so they've beaten the Raptors, Sixers, Lakers, and Pelicans in that stretch. I guess I'm not exactly sure what
without Caris LeVert
the Pelicans means anymore.
Without Caris LeVert, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I just love how they've picked up all the pieces and really created this context for a star to just step in there and automatically kind of start winning. They really are just like one marquee guy away because you have the three-point shooters, Joe Harris, our guy, Rojan Krkić. I don't even know how to say it, so I'm just going to mumble it.
Krkić.
Spencer Dinwiddie, they brought back on a contract. Right. I think he could start, he can come off the bench, depending on what they want to do with D'Angelo Russell. Jared Allen is a Ringer favorite. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, like, a lot of good guys, a lot of good hangs on this team.
I'm very intrigued by the possibility of this being a Jimmy Butler destination.
I like that.
Because I think if he were to leave the Sixers and not stay there, I like everything you're saying, putting him there, because it seems like he just needs a place where he is the guy, if you will, and they need somebody who is more of the guy. And I think that would kind of work, and it wouldn't become, I mean, maybe, you know, it seems like everywhere Jimmy goes, there are some sort of issues that arise, but maybe there it would be a little more fitting, if you will.
Yeah,
I would like it if he wasn't on a contract year, if this didn't mean him signing a new contract there.
Yeah.
Because you know what Jimmy is expecting. Although if he doesn't re-sign with the Sixers and he re-signs with someone else, he won't get the maximum.
Yeah, he would get 4 years instead of 5.
He'd get 4 years
instead of 5. Which is like a little bit better.
He'd still get a maximum contract, but or he'd still seek out a maximum contract, but he'd get 4 years instead of 5. But, I mean, I kind of think it goes against everything that the Nets have been working for years, which is not locking them into something that's a mistake. And Jimmy Butler is 29, very injury prone, not a great locker room force. Kind of feels like a mistake.
Yeah,
although I do, I would love to see him on that team.
But I think the Nets, first of all, they were on that original Jimmy list.
Yeah, because he just wanted to get money and play in a big market.
Right, exactly.
But he definitely cares about winning most.
the fact is that within the big market teams, the Nets are probably on the lower, you know, you probably go Lakers, Knicks, and, you know, even Warriors now.
They're the less flashy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think they're in this weird limbo where they're not exactly not a free agency destination, but they're not the ones players maybe think of first.
They're Clippers East.
Yeah. Something like that, right? And so I think that he would work there because of that if he actually wanted to go there, because I don't know who else is going to want to go there.
Yeah.
I disagree. I think that we are going to see this new wave, especially with this class of free agents, because there are some bigger names. And then in the future, of the most appealing thing about a franchise is the idea that they have enough cap space that you could create the team you want. Because now we're in the era of super teams. I feel like I said this a million times.
But I disagree with that a little bit, because
it's not like they're moving to Wyoming.
No.
Right.
It's New York, I
disagree
it's
that
Brooklyn.
We're in the super team era just a little bit. Like, there are super teams, yes. But as we watched with the Bucks and the Rockets last night, there's a value in having a more
The Rockets
a
are
clear,
a great example, though. Chris Paul went there.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a full super team in the way we may think of as a super
just
team.
I just want to say in the context that players want to team up with each
other. Sure, okay.
And if there is enough available cap space, then that makes a destination appealing.
Yeah, makes the Clippers appealing.
Yeah, we are seeing some guys kind of wanting their own situation. Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler was a guy who didn't seem to really want to team up with LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
I think the interesting question is going to be, would someone like Kevin Durant choose the Nets over a team like the Knicks? And the Knicks have probably more young, cheap talent. So maybe not this coming summer, but the summer after, you could add another star player to go and fill things out. But just in terms of an ownership situation, it seems if you don't want to deal with Jim Dolan, right down the street, you can go and see what's up with our guy,
at
Rodney Keurig.
You took his name and made it American. Rodney Keurig.
A guy, Rod Keurig.
Incredible.
All right, let's move on. So the opposite side of pleasant surprise is most disappointing. And I have down here a pretty obvious one, the Washington Wizards, which Haley got a up close and personal experience with. Yeah, she went to Washington, D.C. In late December.
Yes, December 27th on.
And she spent some time with Tom Satoransky, our guy.
Tommy. As the Americans call him.
Wrote a really great feature on him on theringer.com. You guys should go check it out. But I guess what was life inside the Warriors regime?
The Wizards regime?
What did I say, Warriors?
Warriors.
Yeah, same thing.
W.
You know, honestly, I said in the piece, a lot of the times the locker room was just empty. But I was there when it was announced that Wall would be out for the season.
That's interesting.
Season-ending foot surgery. The game before and the couple games before, he was just out. And then they announced he was going to see a specialist. I don't think I'd put the Wizards as the most disappointing, though, because I had no faith in them at the start of the season. Just because a team has talent, and they certainly do have talent, John Wall has not looked great in the context of his contract, nor has Otto Porter, in my opinion. Bradley Beal is obviously very talented. But just because a team has talent and potential does not in any way mean to me that they should have certain expectations. The Wizards remind me a lot of the Clippers, the Lob City Clippers, and I just never expected them to become anything, because year after year after year, we always saw where it ended. And there was just a very obvious ceiling that I think people ignored. Whether it was situation, guys not liking each other, I think in both teams' case, the Wizards and that Clippers team is true.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's the thing where I've always thought they just need to break it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and for the Clippers, it worked out, right? I mean, sort of, in the sense that they finally decided to cut the cord.
Best case scenario for the Clippers.
Yeah, of course. I don't know if like the Wizards can get to that best case scenario so quickly.
They've always had the talent. I mean, a couple years ago when they first jumped into the playoffs, everyone's like, wow, they got Wall and Beal and...
Best backcourts, right?
Yeah, best backcourts. We said that for years, but it just never came together. So, Paolo, where are you on?
I mean, just on the Wizards really quick, I think it is good to point out that with Beal being the number one option with Wall out, it's been pretty amazing to watch him. You know, he's had a really good games in the last few games. And I think, man, I wish there was a version of this team that did not give Wall that contract and kind of just went all in on Beal and had different pieces around him. But, oh well.
Well, I mean, not to also plug my piece, but to plug my piece. A lot of that has to do with Satoransky too, because the style of play just absolutely changes.
Yeah. Sure.
And I think that actually speaks less to Satoransky than it does to Wall. Mm-hmm. Tomas is like pass first, pass second guy, like score if he has to. And so it gives a lot of the other guys on the team who are all put together like scorers the option to score.
When you were there, did it seem like guys gravitated toward Beal?
You know, honestly, it just seemed like everyone did their own thing.
That's interesting.
It was, of all the locker rooms I've ever been to, it was very much like we're all kind of just doing our own thing. Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as far as other disappointing teams for me, I think it's not to take your corner, but the Pelicans are the one of the more disappointing ones for me, not only because of how they've been this season, but we left off with such a good note. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, we left off with them sweeping the Blazers and, you know, giving the Warriors some slight trouble. You know, it wasn't like they made them worried at any point, but it was like, okay, like, this is a legit team. And now I don't know what to make of them. Like, even seeing Mirotić come back is going to be huge, but I don't even know if that they can reach that ceiling that they once found at second half of last season. It all feels very bleak, and I hate to be the one to be like, I mean, we're just waiting for Davis to make his move kind of thing, but
yeah,
that's kind of how it feels.
Yeah. I mean, for a while now, the rest of the league has viewed New Orleans as the Anthony Davis incubator. It's basically just they're getting him ready. They're like the college feeder system, getting them ready to actually start his career. It's just it's a slog. I mean, we've talked about this before. There's just no energy there. And I think it's interesting. I saw someone the other day was just like, wow, Davis doesn't seem really engaged. I think that's just kind of how he is.
Yeah.
I think he's just kind of prone to seem like he's not all that interested. I think he's the type of guy that needs someone to kind of like get him up for the situation. I always compared it to the way that Draymond Green is an accelerant for Steph Curry. Like, Steph is kind of easy going, but when Draymond's around, he's like, oh yeah, and Steph is doing all the throwing up the hand signals and beating his chest and kind of trolling James Harden randomly in the middle of a game, as if that wasn't just to make a like really clear and obvious point. I don't know. I just think like they need a shot of energy. I think they can come at the trade deadline, but until then, like, they're kind of just stuck in this in the mud.
Yeah.
Any other ones that kind of jump out to you guys? I wrote down the Pistons as one, probably more because I foolishly gave them some hope, and here they are last night just blowing it, giving up 40 something to Kyle Kuzma.
Jeez. The Pistons are very weird to me because on paper they have the talent to at least literally take the easy path that is the 8 or 7 seed in the East, which is a terrible conference. Like, and yet they can't, I don't know what, like, their backcourt is very inconsistent. I think they need to break that up or just make some sort of switch there. But their front court is sort of fun. I mean, I still enjoy watching Blake, even though now he's a different type of player than when he was when he came to the league. But as a whole, I just feel kind of depressed about them. Like, you guys should be taking the, you know, like, it's literally a gimme to take that 7 or 8 seed. You don't even have to be above 500, probably.
Right. A team like the Hornets, a team like the Nets, like, they can go one way or another, but here they are just always above the Pistons. Yeah. It's just really sad when you set this goal and you put all your resources into just making it in. You can't even get over that low bar. I definitely avoid watching them all the time. A lot of it because of Blake.
Right.
It's because I'm so sick of watching him just like just back his way into the post and like do his stupid theatrics and try to get the refs to call him. Did you see these interviews, by the way, he's been giving leading up to his matchup with the Clippers?
Sure.
He's over being known and being a celebrity. Know why you're over and being known is because you're in Detroit and no one gives a fuck about you. That's why.
Yeah.
Like, talk to him about like 2 years ago when he was on these like comedy tours. Like, I'm this big, like, this dude. It's just a very weird and concerted effort to turn the narrative about him. And he even has his beard going. And I wonder if that's just like to make him more look like an everyman. I'm out. Amal Paulo.
All right.
What selling that stock. Like?
It's just a beard.
It's just a beard.
No, but it's just like it's unkempt and it's just like, I don't know. He seems like he's going for something and I don't know.
He looked okay last night. When I was watching them last night, I was trying to decide why I didn't like watching them play. Mm. And it occurred to me that it's because I knew exactly what this team was. And this team was never going to teach me anything. I was never going to see anything new with this team.
Just trying to learn.
I will never watch this team and see something new. Whereas with even the Nets, I will.
Yes.
You know, I know exactly what Andre Drummond is. I know exactly what Reggie Jackson is. I know exactly their ceiling.
You're not in on Luke Kennard?
The newest, most exciting thing that they had was Point Blake having full reign. And even that's kind of gotten old for me.
Yeah.
I just know exactly what they are. It's just like what I was just saying with the Wizards. Their ceiling is so identifiable.
Yeah, there's no hope. There's no like an inherent like tension or any sort of like drama even.
Right. And now even like they've switched up a little bit their style of play. Like they did shoot before, but now they're shooting like the seventh most threes. They're just not even making them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what's actually been the most disappointing thing for me? Mm-hmm. And like I'm actually relishing and saying this because I was out on them before the season. And you have them here as the most confusing team, but for me, they're just the most disappointing because they were supposed to be better. Is the Jazz?
Oh yeah, yeah, they could definitely fit there because I mean, we were talking about them as a potential 2 seed.
Yeah, exactly. Going into the season. And I was like, you guys need to chill. Like there was not like a huge. I thought that we would see what we've been seeing, which is a little Donovan Mitchell regression, and I think you know they. I think all of those analytics say that they. Kind of poised to make a run at some point
in their schedule.
In the second half. Yeah, the schedule is, you know, it's there for the taking. But I don't know. Like, I expected more from the team. And maybe that's just because of the defensive changes, which you wrote about, which also factor into that. But they've been pretty disappointing for me.
Yeah. I wonder, do any other teams fit the confusing bill to you guys? I mean, the Jazz are the one that were atop my list.
I don't think the Jazz are confusing at all.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, I know I sound like a mom who won't pay for her son's black belt because she doesn't think he can get it.
Quite the analogy there.
Is this something that happened to you personally?
No, if I did karate, I would definitely have a black belt, but I never did it.
Okay.
I already knew I'd have a black belt.
Right.
Uh-huh.
No, I just think it's pretty obvious what's going on with them. Like maybe they will have a late season push, turnaround because of their schedule, because the Jazz have a habit of doing that, but look, Donovan Mitchell has taken a year of finding out that it's really hard to be an NBA player. It's even harder to be an NBA star. And he's under all the pressure that his team needs him to be the same type of player and the same type of dominance in the offense that the Rockets need Harden to be.
Yeah.
And this guy's 22 years old. It's not speaking to anything of his future career, except maybe, you know, accolades when we look back on it, that he can't do that this year. But that's what they need him to be. That's how the offense is set up. And he just can't be that this year.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting that a lot of the teams that we're talking about being disappointing or surprising, or later we're going to talk about the Kings, but the rookies from the 2017 draft class that had initial success and are now falling off are among our disappointments. Whereas you have guys like De'Aaron Fox, John Collins, even for the Atlanta Hawks, these guys are starting to pop, and all of a sudden they seem like they're more farther ahead. It's a weird rookie class. I've never seen it swing so wildly this way, and Lonzo being right in the middle of that, where it's game to game, it seems like he's either
such
a successor.
Mark.
Yeah. I don't know. In terms of confusing, he probably is up there.
Yeah, he fits that bill. I mean, he has like one game where he shoots 50% from three, and then one game where he takes 7 shots and misses all of them.
Yeah,
and yet there's like glimpses of him looking like some sort of like modern Steve Nash passing type player that looks great, and then you know he turns the ball over a lot in the next game. So it's a weird back and forth with him.
Yeah, the only other team I had listed here was the Sixers and Jimmy Butler, who we talked about, just mostly because game to game it seems like something could happen where the entire chemistry experiment just like completely combusts. Let's get to this last one quickly. League pass poison, the only creative one I have on the list here. It's basically the team you want to avoid. We talked about this a little bit with the Pistons, but I would say the Bulls, for the similar reasons that Haley said, there's just like not much to unearth there. They even have young, exciting rookies and second-year players like Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, but even they seem to have like been infected by whatever kind of toxic smog hangs over this franchise.
I didn't even want to watch after that entire mess came about.
Yeah.
With Jabari, the coaching staff.
I mean, I think
all of that wasn't even enough for me.
I'm with you. I think him being there, Borland, like, there was nothing appealing to me about, like, I'm very interested in Lauri Markkanen, very interested in Wendell Carter, but until they, like, kind of get their house in order, if you will, like, yeah. There's no appeal.
Well, do you guys watch The Bachelor?
No.
Okay. So there's always, every year, let's go Bachelorette.
Okay.
Just, you know, woman power. Every year, there's always a guy who knows that he's boring, right? And he knows he has nothing to bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
He knows you don't want to watch him on TV compared to these other guys. So he goes above and beyond to be really, like, weird or douchey or, like, take some kind of stand just to get the attention to try to stay on the show longer.
Sure. Great strategy.
It's the Bulls.
That's the Bulls. Yeah. I feel like that would be me on The Bachelor too, because like I don't have like inherently like interesting backstory to talk about. I would just be like, can we just like watch Netflix tonight?
That's not how the show works.
Yeah, so I would either get kicked off or be this guy who's a tryhard by definition.
Now I'm really invested in a Bachelorette with Justin.
Will you wear the turtleneck?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I think I could do some damage there. Maybe like a velour like sports coat or something.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're not the Bulls anymore. You're like the Suns?
The Suns, yeah.
Yeah, you're in the Suns.
That's perfect. What a glow up, as the kids say.
It's a bump.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about the most interesting team in the NBA. Here's a little insider travel secret from our friends at Hotel Tonight. There are tons of empty hotel rooms out there just waiting to be booked. And Hotel Tonight is partnered with these awesome hotels to help them sell those unsold rooms, which means you get incredible deals. Seriously, if you love scoring amazing hotel deals, you gotta try Hotel Tonight. Forget scrolling through never-ending lists. Hotel Tonight shows you a select list of incredible deals at cool hotels they think you'll love. And they even give short profiles of each hotel, complete with all the info you need and pictures of what the rooms really look like. Plus, even though their name's Hotel Tonight, they're not just for last-minute bookings. You can also book in advance. Perfect for spontaneous weekend getaways, three-day weekends, staycations, road trips, business trips, booking a place with a pool, and more. I recently have come to have a love affair with Las Vegas. Wasn't much of a fan when I used to go for Summer League back in the day. Just wasn't my vibe. Wasn't much of a gambler. Didn't really get out to any shows, but I have been going lately. I think I've gone twice in the past 2 months. And this most recent time, I used Hotel Tonight to get a last minute deal. And it was great. I got into a nice hotel. Definitely had a lovely time in lovely Las Vegas. So to start scoring amazing deals at incredible hotels, go to hoteltonight.com or download the app now. With 2/3 of guys experiencing notable hair loss by age 35, most guys assume losing their hair is inevitable as they age. Some don't care, some shave their head, some embrace hats, but what they don't know is that there are FDA-approved medications designed to stop hair loss and even regrow hair. That's why we're excited to partner with our sponsor, Roman. Roman makes it easy to get safe, FDA-approved hair loss treatment, all from your phone or computer. And when you go to getroman.com/ringerMBA, your online visit is free. Talk to a licensed doctor on their secure chat service, no appointment times or reading bad magazines in the waiting rooms. Once your doctor ensures that treatment will be safe and effective for you, Roman's dedicated pharmacy can ship your medication to you with free 2-day shipping. If you're noticing unwanted hair loss, starting treatment early is key, and Roman can help. And today, Roman is giving the Ringer MBA show listeners a free online visit at getroman.com/ringerMBA. That's getroman.com/ringerMBA for a free visit to get started. Go to getroman.com/ringerMBA. We're back. We saved the most interesting question of our first half kind of overview for the second half of the podcast. In part because I think like every time we get into these sort of discussions in the office, I feel like ultimately this is the one that is the most energetic, the most lively.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking Warriors Lakers.
No, we're talking
the
about
other
the
other King. Team in California.
The most important team in California.
Yes, exactly. We're talking about the Sacramento Kings, who we are describing as the most interesting team in the NBA right now. And to do so, we brought in a little help. Riley Football himself, Riley McAtee, welcome to the group chat.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Why don't you tell everyone your Sacramento Kings credentials? Why are you a fan?
Well, I grew up there. I was going to games there.
Because we can accuse you of being a bandwagon. That happens often. With
Oh, my goodness.
There are, yeah, so many Kings bandwagon fans right now. We're really just, you know, go back to the Warriors. I don't know. I mean, I grew up around the Kings, and they were really good when I was like 8 or 9 years old. So they were like formative for me. I was going to those games, watching Chris Webber and Peja Stojakovic, Vlade Divac. Still watching Vlade Divac now, interestingly enough. And, you know, like Vivian, all those guys.
I think it's a painful painful decade, I guess I'd say.
Yeah, it's been a rough go, would say.
Yeah.
But
my sports fandom peaked at 9 years old. It's been all downhill.
But this season, maybe it's all worth it, all of that pain and suffering, because I would say that they're the most interesting team in the NBA right now. But also, like, I wonder if this is more rewarding, Riley, given all of the struggling you've had over the past couple of years. They've obviously had, like, the good years, but this is, like, a breakthrough. And I feel like that, at some points, can be more just special.
It's definitely special. It's also just clear how low the bar is, and that they are 20-21. They have a losing record right now, and Kings fans are just like, man, this is awesome. Can't remember a season like this in years. It's been a decade since we've been this good.
I feel like Western Conference, though, having that record is really impressive.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I feel like it's not just, I mean, I think the cool thing about this season is that it hasn't just been Kings fans like, oh, this team is kind of fun and exciting, and we watch them, you know, like, repeatedly. It's like the rest of the league is like loving watching the Kings.
Yeah, to be clear, they are fun as hell.
Yeah.
And they're young as hell. So it's kind of like, okay, you know what? Hey, we weren't expecting to contend this season, but we can kind of see the pieces of a future, not like title contender, but hey, maybe we'll be in the playoffs. We can one day get swept by the Warriors and it'll be great.
It's great honor. Because what's unexpected for you guys for having this good season is also what's painful for other teams. Like at the same record, the Pelicans, the Wolves, they were definitely not expecting to have this outcome this season, but in a far, far more depressing way.
Yeah, and that's the power of just hope and like just being on the upswing rather than the Pelicans, who are clearly on a downswing, no offense.
There's really no expectations.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the expectations.
Yeah.
Do you still feel that way, or do you feel like now it's going to be a disappointment if you don't make the playoffs?
No, I like a week ago was like, you know, I think we can have a good shot at the playoffs. I've now looked closer at the standings and we've lost 4 of the last 5 and I'm kind of like, okay, the Kings are not making it. This isn't happening.
I totally disagree with you.
It would take a crazy run. There's just so many teams all bunched up there.
Lifelong fan, it's pessimistic.
They have lost. Yeah. No, and that makes sense. They have lost.
It's not like this team is giving me a lot of reasons to be like, definitely. Oh, they're going to pull it out. They always do.
I don't know though. All of these losses have been so close, right? Like I think an average of 5 points. They have 11 million dollars in cap space to make some kind of change. They are reportedly in talks for Enes Kanter. He could totally help with one of your worst sections, which is rebounding.
Yep.
And also, you guys play really fast and you shoot the 3-ball well. And that can just hang with anyone on any given night.
Yeah, just to go over where they are right now. They're 20-21. So right in the middle of the season, they are 10th in the Western Conference at a minus 1.4 point differential, which isn't particularly good considering everybody above them has a positive one, and they're usually in the twos and the fours there. I don't know. I do see a lot to like about this team. I think Kaylee brings up a good point. They do have an extra move to make. And both super intrigued by their best three players, Bogdan, Buddy, and De'Aaron Fox. But I also wonder if, like, over the back end of the season, that youth and, like, that kind of lack of defense or, you know, defense coming and going will ultimately kind of be their downfall.
Well, you're already seeing it because they're throwing away these games. They have these huge leads, and then they just disappear.
Mm-hmm. The Phoenix game was abysmal.
Yeah, it was. But for a while, though, they were a really good fourth quarter team, right? Like, for a while, they had a stretch there where they were actually finishing games. So it may just be the fact that over such a long season, like, that youth that Justin has talked about is kind of just what catches up with them, which, like, I think it's fine. Like, that's just where they are right now.
That's kind of the path, is that they need to make one move. They're the only team with cap space going into the trade deadline next month. And then they need basically to do what happened in the fourth quarter over the first like half of the season, where they would kind of run teams off the floor in the final few minutes. They need that to happen like for the season, where, you know, they can run at this crazy pace after teams have played 60 games and kind of just run guys off the floor.
Well,
I don't know if it'll happen.
They kind of have every reason to go for it now. I think that it almost provides a little bit of clarity. I was just looking up, Kevin Pelton has something on the Celtics draft picks kind of going into the deadline here. It's supposed to land at 11th. So it's the type of thing where I don't know, even if you still had the pick, it would have been the type of thing you would have like pearl clutched about. There's a very clear direction with the franchise. And I wonder if that almost makes it easier because you're not worried about should we tank at the deadline. You just kind of go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if we had the pick, I feel like they'd still be going for it for sure.
I agree.
Because it's like we're not going to win the title. And so, you know, you'll see a lot of fans will be like, well, you should just tank, get Zion, like whatever it is. But it's been over a decade. And I feel like Kings fans are just desperate for any playoff games. Even if it's four playoff losses to the team that's 90 minutes down the road, it doesn't matter. It's just get us into the tournament.
Eventually, for a team like that, for a franchise that has that kind of history as well, you have to learn how to win. Like we saw this last year with the Wolves. They just had no experience winning. So they, when you have an opportunity to, you really have to go full throttle toward it. And I think it'd be such a mistake for them to try to backtrack that and tank. Because we were talking even about Justin, the Grizzlies, and how it might be better for them to just do that. And it's odd because they have more win now talent than the Kings do. But I would so much rather have the Kings.
But you know what it is?
That makes so much more sense in my mind to me.
You know what it is? It's the type of, specifically the type of win now talent, because like the Grizzlies are also facing that same reality where it's like, we're probably not going to win the title, right? So, and their players, their win now players, are on the downswing, right? So it's about like the youth. It all goes back, I think, to their youth and kind of how that is their biggest asset almost. And so why not exercise it in trying to get some playoff experience?
I mean, at a certain point, you have to stop rebuilding. You have to, these guys actually have to figure out how to win games. And I think it's 12 years they've gone without getting into the playoffs at this point. And
who's counting?
And so at a certain point, you kind of have to lean into it. And I think their biggest advantage going forward is De'Aaron Fox. Like he has to be as good as possible because he's the kind of guy who could swing the franchise. I'm curious though, like in terms of like favorites, where does he rank among Kings, like just favorite players?
Like right now, currently?
Just ever.
Isn't it too soon? Wow. He's only had a season of playing like this.
Yeah, I know, but I already love him.
Yeah, it's too soon. I really love him. I don't know. I mean, you can't rank him up there with the guys from the early 2000s. And I think probably Mitch Richmond's ahead of him. But, you know, where he is right now, it's special.
Maybe a playoff will change that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he's the type of guy who would definitely thrive in that environment. I mean, the obvious question, I guess, to follow up there is like, does it make not having Luka any easier?
Come on. I feel like that they would fit together and it would be awesome. I know there are some people who are like, oh, they can't fit together. And it's like, who cares?
It would be pretty fascinating to see how they would fit together because they are both ball handlers.
Well, I kind of feel like not having Luka there has allowed De'Aaron to be who he is.
Right.
I think they could coexist together, but we've seen in certain situations, most prominently the Sixers, like you could put two guys who don't necessarily fit perfectly together and it still kind of works. But at the same time, when those guys are separated, it kind of just makes what they do special even more special. And I feel like we've gotten De'Aaron in part because we don't have Luka there. And you've seen kind of some of their wings step up around him, particularly Buddy Hield.
I think it'd be probably be better for the Kings if they had Luka and Fox together, but maybe it's better for NBA fans to see them both separate doing what they do. I'm going to be bitter about Luka forever.
Okay, good.
I'm going to be bitter about Luka forever. Every time I see a highlight or a stat, I just like slam my computer shut.
But what a relief, at least this year, that De'Aaron bumped up, because I don't think Bagley would have ever compared in terms of forgiving
to Luka.
And now this is the most interesting thing to me now, is that Justin and I were talking about this yesterday. Now your season and what is going to become of it, if you guys could make the playoffs, is on Vlade making a decision, which is not usually what goes well for him. Decision making.
We'll see. It's been a roller coaster.
What would you like to happen?
I still think we need help at the small forward position and probably somebody who can rebound. Like you were saying, it's sort of been the Achilles heel of this team in like their last few losses. Maybe that's a little bit of recency bias, but they are a bad rebounding team overall. They're like 26 in the NBA. And it's just brutal. In the Phoenix loss in particular, I think they went the final 3 minutes without a single rebound. And it was unbelievable.
They definitely haven't poured any resources into getting big men. So that's...
Yeah. We always could use another one, you know?
I think it is interesting just because I think a lot of teams are maybe probably going to go into the deadline, not looking to do anything. It seems like it's very much a seller's market simply because everyone seems to be in the playoff race, particularly in the West. And I think a team like the Kings and the Pelicans, and as we've seen just recently with some of these minor deals, I think if you're willing to deal, if you're willing to give up some picks, I think there's like a huge market advantage. I think the Kings are in the perfect situation. Not only is their first round pick gone, but they do have every reason to be good this year. And if anything, like maybe do they need another second round pick? Do they need another Frank Mason in there? Do they need another? Well, Justin Jackson was a first round pick, but he probably should have been a second round pick because he's not that good. I don't know. I just think it would be really interesting for them to go for it and like to energize the fan base. That is a gorgeous arena, and it seems like they're still pulling people there, even though they haven't been particularly good of late, which is like super encouraging. But if you get into the playoffs and that place is hopping, and then all of a sudden, I don't know. I think it just pays dividends down the road.
If they
get
into the eight seed, go for it though, right? Because if overreaching and then all of a sudden you're stunting the growth of this team by locking into someone like you wrote down Otto Porter Jr., right? Mm-hmm. I think that is such a mistake.
Well, I think it makes sense in theory, but I think when you think about the bigger picture, it doesn't because of that very reason. I do think that Otto has had a bad season in part because of his environment. Mm-hmm. But it's still a lot of money that I don't think he's likely worth or is playing.
Like no.
Right. So last time you watched him and thought, wow, he's really, really worth whatever the Kings would throw at him. And they'd have to throw something at him so that's substantial because the Wizards have been so hesitant to get rid of any part of their big three.
Yeah, he's definitely never going to be worth that contract. I guess the other side, which Riley, you could definitely speak to, is like who's the last guy that willingly like wanted to be a King, and now he would be traded there. Right. But at the same time, we've seen what people who have gone
there. Shumpert loves it.
He loves it.
Shumpert does
love it. Tiana, Junior, they love it there.
I think because like Shumpert, like nobody else wanted Shumpert, so he feels like some in some ways indebted that they like lean into him is almost like they're he's kind of like an identity setter in a certain degree. He's like he is the veteran. I think that they thought Zach Randolph would be
right when they were in LA to play the Clippers recently or the Lakers actually. I remember who they were playing in the locker room afterward. Like Shump was just talking and he's talking about the team and he's like, yeah, he's like, sometimes I like bring in my championship ring when things get tough. I was like, wow, veteran leadership right there.
Love that guy.
He's been great. I love him. Yeah, I'm less worried about like a big contract that you know the NBA is so hesitant about, like a bad contract and how it can be on your books forever.
This isn't the NFL, Riley.
You can't just cut guys whenever you want. It's real weird. But the reason the Kings have $11 million, I think, is in part because we never have guys who want to take the money that we throw at them. So I'm a little like, hey, if we trade for a guy who's on a big, bad contract, who cares?
Yeah, and it's becoming an advantage, to Haley's point. It's just they can absorb so much more money. A guy like Enes Kanter, like, I don't know if he's going to make a huge difference, but like that's a free rotation player that you get simply because you have the extra money. Like
Who's been in the playoffs.
Who's been in the playoffs, right.
I mean,
he's been forced off before in the playoffs.
That's true. I mean, he's definitely not going to help anything rim protection-wise, but I do think that there's a lot that he could bring. And what we were saying the other day is that if the Knicks would take off another expiring contract, then you'd still have money left over.
Yeah, and I think specifically Otto Porter, I mean, we could talk about some other guys, but I think Porter just gives them what they need right now. They're a little bit weak on the wings, as you said, Riley. I like, actually, the core trio and what they've been able to do, particularly on the defensive end. That's been kind of a revelation to a certain degree, but they still, like, I'm still not sold on De'Aaron Fox being everything on offense and also being their best, like, perimeter defender. I think, like, as we've seen across the league, that wears on guys. Paul George is really the only guy that can do it.
I mean, second year, you know, that very well could be De'Aaron next year if he doesn't get some kind of help.
Yeah, and like we talk about this with the Sixers, right? That the window is Ben Simmons' rookie contract. They could add all these guys around him because he's so advanced. And De'Aaron, maybe not to that extent, but he's playing beyond his years. And all of a sudden, one or two rookie contracts. I believe Buddy's still on his rookie contract. Bogdog on like that weird three-year deal.
Yeah, he's on a fairly robust contract.
I just think also maybe, but Donovan is an example of why I'd be hesitant to put someone like Otto next to De'Aaron Fox. Because he kind of needs to level out his career a little bit, what he's going to be. Look at what happened to Donovan Mitchell. If they would have thrown the farm at somebody and Donovan's having a bad year and then they're not as flexible anymore, but the expectations are extra high. I just think when you have a young talent, taking your time is the way to go.
That's a good point.
Granted, I understand the Kings want to win as much as they can, as soon as they can, because it's been a long time. Yeah.
I mean, it's really a tightrope, because Justin's point is very much like how the league is thinking, which is what Ellen Brand said, which is like Ben Simmons' rookie contract is the window. And yet there's also another force of like patience and developing young guys that's pulling the other way. And I find that kind of fascinating, because I think the Sixers went with the let's win now mentality with the Butler trade. And I don't know how that's going to work out for them. So I'm more, like, obviously not exactly the same parallel with the Kings.
To be clear, I'm against the Kings trading for Jimmy Butler.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, that juxtaposition between those types of young teams is very fascinating.
Jimmy is a little bit different, because his contract is expiring at the end of the season. Granted, they did have to give up assets for him that will not return. And, you know, maybe he could do some damage in the meantime in the locker room. It wouldn't just reset. But I do understand what you're saying about them also being win now. I think that with a talent like Ben Simmons, it's much clearer that that should be the approach.
Sure. Yeah, that's totally fair. I mean, Ben, even though we do kind of bag on him a lot, maybe not Haley, but it does seem like...
Yeah, how high did I rank him?
You were pretty high on him.
That's not far off.
And in your defense, like, it does feel like the national conversation about him has soured him more than like his actual performance and his statistics. I guess what Paolo was talking about, just in terms of like, how do you... like best execute that one like key move to take the leap, is the Kings' like grasp on their window seems to be more tenuous than anybody's. Like, the fact that they are even close to 500 is just like a godsend.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like any little thing can kind of just ruin this in a second. We were just talking on the way in here. Apparently, Dave Yeager, who's from Minnesota, got asked about whether or not he'd be interested in the Minnesota Timberwolves job. And he gave a pretty Dave Yeager response, which was, oh, it's interesting, but my focus is right here. Didn't necessarily walk away from that, probably because in the past, he's had a few issues with some of his front offices, first in Memphis, then in Sacramento. Yeah. And it just seems like he's always one of these guys looking around, and maybe he's only happy when he's like unhappy sort of guys, which I can relate to. I think it's like almost hammering home the point that like the Kings probably should be all in on this, because who knows when it could just flip the other way in a second.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. He's only under contract for next season, through next season. And I feel like the moment that Minnesota job opened up, it was like, probably want to ink him to a few more years, because I feel like he's done a good job.
I feel like speaking of Minnesota, though, that's a good example of why you shouldn't leap all in.
Yeah,
because they did with Jimmy, and everything got messed up, and they were counting on him being next to Towns and Wiggins, and that being the team that's going to lead them out of this, you know, also decade-long hole, 11 years. And then that all totally fell apart.
It is pretty funny that, you know, not to like zoom out too far out, but the two teams that have been in the finals the last few years and two teams like that have won finals are because one has a transcendent player in LeBron, and the other, for a while there, got lucky with Steph's contract and the injury that he had and was able to fit in other players.
Both of them benefited from homegrown players.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah, no, of course. But in the sense that like, we're kind of like looking for the perfect situation for that young team, but it just kind of is happenstance, is what I'm trying to get at, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of luck that goes into it, and it's just really interesting. I mean, I guess the question is, just to wrap it up here, do they make it or do they not?
I'm used to being heartbroken, so I'm going to say they'll get the ninth seed.
Would you trade for Otto Porter?
I think I would.
What would you give up for him?
Okay, I wouldn't do anything that would jeopardize the like long-term future of the Kings, but
I don't think
what do you Otto mean? Porter, okay, but the money doesn't matter to me. We don't do anything with the money ever.
No, that's a good point.
Just having Otto Porter, I don't think necessarily would jeopardize Fox, Bogey, Buddy, but I'm not giving up those guys or like high picks or anything for him.
What do you guys think?
I think that I want them to make it so badly, but I think that I'm with Riley. I think they'll be just out, like 9th or 10th seed.
They're making it for sure.
Yeah.
There you go.
Facts.
Wow. Love it.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for us for another rousing edition. Rollicking, as Paolo would say, edition of the group chat. For Haley, for Paolo, for Riley, for Bobby Wags on the ones and twos. We will see you next week.
Basketball is very good. Basketball is very good.